Welcome to the Do Deals Get Rich podcast. I'm Raleigh Williams, former merger and acquisition attorney, sold my last business for $26 million, and now I own DealMaven.io. I'm here to demystify deals so you can get rich as quickly as possible and move on with your life. All right, we got Marty Fonke from Westbound Road, which is a holdco and a deal advisory business, and we're going to talk all things deals today. Marty, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fantastic, Raleigh. Glad to be on here with you.
Where are you based out of again?
Kansas City.
Home of the Chiefs. Kansas City. They're looking good so far. So what's the one pager on how you got to this podcast, the highlight of your career?
The highlight of my
career. The zenith.
I've spent the last 23 years of my M&A career culminating to this. So
yeah, this is welcome to the summit, and we're glad to have you. You know what I mean?
I can retire a happy man. Yeah. So real quickly, built a business way back in the early 2000s or right around 2000 with a couple of buddies, and had no inkling what M&A was or buying businesses and selling businesses was. We just built a business and started making good money on it. And then somebody came along and said, hey, do you want to sell your company? And we're like, okay. Our first deal without a clue what we were doing, wound up, you know, doing all right and quite pleased with that. And then went from there and built another business and sold it. That one was deliberate. And then from there went to work for a company that was PE backed. And we wound up doing about $300 million in acquisitions, with me spearheading kind of the very first acquisition that the company did after the PE invested into the business, and then became a member of the M&A team, going out and identifying acquisitions and figuring them out and doing the due diligence and all that kind of stuff. Just absolutely caught a bug for it. My whole career has been based on growing businesses. Now we call it scaling businesses these days, but it used to just be called growing businesses, primarily through marketing. Through my marketing efforts, I've literally created over $1 billion in sales. But in the last several years, it's been through more of a combination of marketing and M&A, growth through acquisition, which is anymore a lot easier than marketing. And so I've been growing businesses in our portfolio and then helping others grow their businesses through strategic acquisitions, partial acquisitions, and the growth through acquisition, and then coupled that with some, you know, great marketing tactics and seeing some great success. So there's 20 years or so of history. So all told, I've been involved in about now I think 50 something deals, about $500 million total, and just getting started, really. I love it. Passion, excited, you know, come through normal times. It came through the crazy bull market of, you know, 2021, and now I'm seeing the really interesting 2022 like landscape. So,
and Westbound, in terms of division of labor between kind of holdco looking for your own acquisitions, and then the deal advisory side doing the service space for others.
So it's a blurry line. I mean, Westbound Road was originally set up as a holdco because I was executing my own acquisitions. And a couple of things started happening at the same time. One is I started getting a lot of deal flow coming through that, you know, they weren't things I was going to buy. These were owners and founders who needed an exit of some sort or needed an investment or something. You know, and the landscape's kind of complicated, a little bit daunting out there if you're not really familiar with it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunity to get ripped off. So a lot of people started asking me for help. At the same time, you know, I was like, well, I've got all this deal flow coming in. I should do something with it. So we just kind of started doing more and more advisory and helping these founders. And so it's a little bit of a blurry line. When an opportunity comes in, we look at it, we determine, okay, is this something we want to buy into? If it's not, we look at it. Is this something that one of our close partners wants to buy into? We work with a couple of, you know, close investment partners. I know exactly what their criteria are and what they're looking for.
Right.
And we'll bring those guys in right away. And if it's doesn't meet those criteria, then we'll help them, you know, find an exit or a partial exit, whether it's full or partial exit, and just kind of hold their hand along the way, make sure that they don't get burned. And there's a lot of misunderstanding out there in the space. There's a lot of misinformation. We just try to be great to everybody and treat everybody well and do right by them and make sure that they get what they want. And we get a little something out of it when we help them, and everybody wins.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've been talking about partials and I've seen it from a lawyer perspective. It was a force mechanism for me as an entrepreneur just to be able to take chips off of the table. And obviously, I'd seen private equity guys and like the biggest players in the world do it, because I feel like usually I'm yelling into a dark abyss of people. And so when me and you first connected, it was like, you're my partial twin.
I'm your soulmate. I'm your partial.
You're my long lost partial twin.
How
did you come to start using that and like using that as a mechanism to get deals done?
So one of my very first deals was a microbrewery, and we did a Kickstarter campaign for them. And as part of the Kickstarter campaign, we had a bunch of like swag and t-shirts and hats and all that kind of stuff for the deal. So that campaign was really interesting because we got in, we basically bought in on a partial on the brewery. And then when we executed the Kickstarter campaign, we used a company that I own part of to get all the materials and everything built. And then the funds that we raised, we applied towards an equity buy-in, a partial acquisition equity buy-in. So I wound up actually like getting three partials out of one deal with that. And so I just started realizing kind of how fun it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, why don't own all of your supply chains? Whoever you're writing checks to, you should own a piece of that. And whoever's writing checks to you, you should own a piece of them.
Yeah.
And it was a really simple concept. Like I said, big corporations, mega companies do that all the time, you know, fully integrated supply chain. Smaller businesses don't usually think like that, but it's the way to go. So that's kind of how I got started. The other thing was that I started doing more aggressive acquisitions. I was seeing more and more deals where one of my earlier deals was a business where there were three partners and two of the partners were done and they wanted out. But the one partner absolutely wanted to keep the business. And they came to me and said, we need to sell the business. Okay, why do you need to sell the business? Well, you know, it's a successful, thriving agency. It's profitable, but, you know, none of us, we don't even speak to each other anymore. We need out of this deal. And so the one partner said, well, do you want out of the deal? No, I really would like to keep the business, but, you know, we have to sell it because we can't get along. I'm like, can you just sell 2/3 of it? And they literally hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
They literally hadn't thought of it. So we wound up structuring a deal where he actually wound up with 51% of the business, and we got in on the other 49%. And so everybody's happy. But you know, it was a partial acquisition. I don't want to own the whole thing. I don't want to run that business on the day to day.
Right.
I want somebody who still has the fire and the passion and the drive and wants to run that business. But the concept of a partial acquisition was so far removed from his mind that he literally thought that the business that he had spent, I think at that time, 5 years or 6 years building, that he had no choice but to sell it and give up on his dream because it was all or nothing. By the way, he'd been told that by business brokers.
For sure.
And so when he got to me, I was like, well, you don't have to sell the whole thing. You can keep it. Like the heavens parted and rays came down and you know, and I realized that like, there's a whole world of people out there who need partials and they aren't being told that it exists and how to do it. And it's kind of scary and daunting for them. And, you know, so go help them out.
Obviously there's kind of this whole trend of like no money down, no money out of pocket, like service for equity stuff. What amount of deals do you see capital actually being exchanged in the transaction? I would assume like in a partner buyout like that, like those, I mean, maybe they'll seller finance a portion of it, but like you got to have a little jingle in your pocket is my assumption. I
mean, okay. So let's be clear on definitions here. No money down is different than no money out of pocket.
For sure.
Okay. So no money down deals are like unicorns. I actually almost did a no money down deal about 3 weeks ago with a business that I was advising. He'd had it on the market for a little while and he had a deadline. I said, if you don't hit your deadline, I will buy this business from you. And here are the terms. And it would have been no money, literally no money down. And just,
just to be clear, delineate the difference between no money down and no money out of pocket for somebody that's like,
no money down is where you walk into a business and you literally don't put any money at all down on the business. Like somebody hands it to you and it does happen. And I just about had one a couple weeks ago and I'll finish that story and tell you how. When people think of no money down deals, they usually think of a seller finance deal where the seller's financing 100% of the transaction.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But like, if you go like SBA, the SBA is going to require 10%, and the 10% has to be cash you already have. And there's a lot of rules. And it's sort of like buying a house. You have to have the down payment already, that sort of thing. So no money down deals are rare. And that's kind of what I said. No money out of pocket is a little bit different, where you may structure a deal where you're cobbling together different financial tools to put a deal together. So let me kind of explain the deal that I just did, because I was working with the seller and he'd had some interest, but it wasn't like, you know, we didn't have any offers or anything like that. And he had a deadline. I was like, I think this is an interesting business. I'd be willing to buy it for my daughter to run. And it was a small business, a couple $100,000. And I said, I'd be willing to buy it for my daughter to run, but here's the terms I would buy it under. And he was like, yeah, if we don't find a buyer, I'll do that, which was a no money down. Like literally I was just going to cash flow the payments out. That would have been a true no money down deal. But a buyer came along who made an offer with some amount of money down, not an insignificant amount of money down, a nice down payment and seller financing. And the seller agreed to it. This was, by the way, a subscription business, and it was a thriving, profitable subscription business. When it came time to do the settlement, a lot of the subscribers were on annual plans. And so the seller had collected the annual revenue up front, but the new buyer was going to have to fulfill those shipments for the next 9 months, 10 months, however long. And so he had to be credited for the money that the seller had already collected. When it was all said and done, the guy that bought the business wrote the actual amount of money he wrote was $11,000.
Yeah.
$11,000 for a business that is profitable at the tune of $3,000 a month. That business is going to pay for itself in 3.5 months. So that was almost a no money down, but it was almost a no money out of pocket. So they're out there. It was kind of kicking myself. It's like, I could have just done that,
For 10 grand.
It would have been as simple and just, whatever. But so no money out of pocket means the seller isn't necessarily just giving you the business and walking away. You're finding opportunity for other cash. So sometimes there's equipment in a business that can get financing against or sell against. Sometimes there's a lot of accounts receivable that you could fund against. Sometimes you can go to a supplier. We've used this technique. So we've done deals where we've gone to the supplier of a business. It's a major supplier. And we've said, look, we're going to acquire this business. We want to keep the business with you. We'll guarantee that we're going to buy a certain amount of inventory from you for the next 2 or 3 years. But in exchange, we'd like you to fund part of this acquisition. And they will, because they want to lock up a contract long-term.
Sure.
That's beneficial to them. So we have over 200 ways funding a deal that is not money out of our pocket.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily no money down, but it is no money out of pocket. And so that's kind of the difference. That makes
sense. Yeah, that makes sense. Particularly in the partial acquisition realm, what would you say is some common threads where those deal types make sense? And I guess a follow-on question to that would be, what are some pitfalls that you've made along the way? The mistakes are always more interesting than the highlight. I like the lowlights more than the highlights.
So common threads, revenue-wise, I see businesses that are doing about $1 million a year in revenue. Very commonly, that's the threshold where a business kind of goes from being a one-man band, kind of the owner's, it's basically a full-time job for the owner, right? And they got a team, but it kind of relies on them. And a business can't bump up usually above about $1 million a year, regardless of the business, I see, without the owner like doing something different. And so you'll see this, and 1 million and 3 million is, I see it, I don't see it at 2, I see it at 1 and 3. Where they kind of plateau there. And those are opportunities for partials because they need some help. They need operational efficiency. They need an operating system. They need marketing help. They need something, logistics, whatever it is, they're usually stuck and they need something. And so a partial makes sense there because if you identify what they're missing and can apply that in, then that can take that business to the next level. So I see a lot of $1 million and $3 million kind of annual revenue businesses that get kind of stuck. And so those are great opportunities. Above that, you'll see it kind of from 3 to 7 million, it's kind of the Wild West. And then once you get above 7 million pushing towards 10, then you start getting into competing with the PEs,
those
kinds of deals. And so I kind of stay under 10 million for the most part, stay under 7 million, just because we just kind of play in a different realm. And then we'll sell to the PEs, we'll scale and sell. But for a lot of our people we're working with are kind of like in that 3 million, 5 million range, somewhere in there. Pitfalls, you know, the downside of a partial is if you buy into a business and it turns out it's a disaster, or the person's a disaster, or there's skeletons in the closet. Well, there's always skeletons in the closet. You just have to know what skeletons you can deal with. We always do deals that can be extracted out of. We've had to unwind a few deals.
Like an extraction through a buy sell, like a buy sell agreement, or
usually it's a buy sell or some sort of recovery. We've exercised different kind of options when we've had to get out of deals. I've had some I've literally just signed papers and walked away from because it was just like it's not worth the time and effort. You know, we've had others where we still maintain the hold, but we've like sold some back and just maintain like a very minority. And we've had others where we've literally just sold it back. We've taken a lot of seller letter notes where, you know, we're basically just holding a note against our what was equity. And then if they ever have a liquidity event, we'll go and collect it. But, you know, we extricate ourselves from the cap table, basically. We've had a few of those. I mean, one of my reasons for deal flow is bad partnerships.
What's up, everyone? I hope you're enjoying this episode. We are here trying to give you as much value as possible for free. As you know, we don't run ads on this podcast. We never will. If you're finding this episode valuable, if you could give us a 5-star rating and share this with a friend you're ready to do deals with, we are going to be one of the top 20 podcasts in the business category, and we need your help to do it. It means the world to me. Now let's get back to our regularly scheduled broadcast.
Reasons for deal flow is bad partnerships. I see it all the time.
Sure.
And so if I'm getting into partnership with somebody, the odds are some of them are getting bad. Because sometimes these aren't people I know super well, and we can do as much due diligence and research and background and everything else as we can, but sometimes, you know, they don't work out. So you need to structure the deal so you can get out of it if you want.
So buy sell agreements.
We do phantom equity agreements that we can get out of. We do automatic, you know, basically we build in the exit plan when we go in. If this happens, this is what the exit's going to be. We pre-value it going in. So we say, you know, we're either going to buy you out at this price or you're going to buy us out at this price. We kind of try and look at all the scenarios. And we build out exits before we go in, just because I didn't used to, obviously, but a few times I'm like, oh, okay, let's actually structure, let's plan the exit before we go in. So everyone's kind of different depending on how you negotiate. It's also much easier to negotiate when you're going in because, you know, it's like a prenup, right? Nobody thinks you're going to get divorced.
Yeah.
So negotiate those on the upfront, figure out, you know, it kind of depends on what kind of partial you're doing and how you're doing the acquisition, but negotiate those on the upfront, put them into your contracts when you're buying in, have them in place, try and think of every provision that can go wrong, whether they want out, you want out, somebody else buys them, whether you sell your shares or whether it's a fleet acquisition, like figure every scenario that can happen and address it up front, value it up front, and then you'll be good.
Yeah. Maybe it's a little bit of this, the idea of like, when you want the yellow Ferrari, all you see is yellow Ferraris. But I feel like I hear people talking about M&A, growth through acquisitions. That seems to be a lot more prevalent now. And again, maybe it's just because I'm paying attention to it because I'm doing it more than I was when I was running a trampoline park business. And do you see an acceleration in appetite from buyer, seller, both, none, stable?
Oh, absolutely. It's not just you. I mean, certainly, you know, if you're in the space, you're going to see the space. But if you look at the hard numbers, I mean, 2021 was eclipsed, you know, global merger and acquisition deals. It eclipsed any record by far. I mean, it was a 5.2 billion or trillion, billion. Anyway,
a lot. Trillion. Yeah, it's got to be trillion.
In 2021. And then, of course, we're coming in 2022 and it remains strong. And I think a lot of that M&A activity with the big boys and the VCs and everything else trickles down to kind of the lower middle market and that sort of thing. And so there's absolutely an unprecedented level of interest and awareness about that, but not enough, you know. The statistics show us that, you know, the baby boomers own the majority of small and medium-sized businesses, and they're starting to retire in huge numbers. And, you know, when they retire, what are they gonna do with their business? They either gotta, you know, turn off the lights, lock the doors and walk away, or they're going to want to sell their business. So a shocking number of them don't think about an exit, don't think about selling. And so I don't think there's enough awareness yet about mergers and acquisitions across the board, other than most people think of it as just big names, Wall Street, you know, Amazon buying Whole Foods kind of thing.
Right.
They don't think about it for the businesses that they're involved in their lives. So obviously the market's telling us that there's a lot of interest there because we've hit record levels. You know, 2022 has been off from a valuation standpoint. I think, you know, we were in a bubble in 21, but the number of deals is that we've actually done more deals in 22 than we did in 21. And we did a lot of deals in 21.
Yeah.
It's been a weird year. There was kind of this pause in the spring. You know, the stock market kind of tanked and you know, and people started realizing inflation was a thing and everybody kind of like held on to their money for about 2 months or 2 or 3 months there. You know, part of the reason 2021 was such a big year was that for most of 2020, because of COVID, all this investment capital was being held on to because nobody knew what was going on. Well, investment capital can't be held on to. You're losing money if you're holding on to it. It has to be deployed. So we had this massive pent-up demand for 6 months of 2020 that then was unleashed by the end of 2020 and rolled into 2021 and created, you know, a record year for mergers and acquisition globally. Then you came into 2022 and the first couple months, the first quarter was really strong, but then second quarter was everybody just kind of panicked and kind of pulled back on their investments. What we've seen over the summer, we've had an unbelievable summer, that best summer we've ever had, which usually summer's kind of slow. Everybody's on vacation. And we do a lot of business in Europe and Asia. And of course in Europe, they just, you know, take the whole summer off on holiday. But we are really busy in Europe right now. But what I saw is that a lot of capital was being held onto for a few months. But again, investors, especially with the rate of inflation, they're losing money if they don't have that capital deployed. And so we saw a very strong uptick in, you know, starting in late June, July, and July and August were some of the best months we've ever had. And it's continuing to be very strong into, as of this recording, we're in September. And, you know, when you're listening to this, probably be right around the first part of October. But, you know, money has to be deployed. Capital has to be deployed. People are still wanting to buy businesses and sell businesses. And transactions are always going to take place. And so right now, things are looking really strong, even though there's a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace.
I feel like there's a big kind of, the market is kind of self-delineating between like boring businesses and like internet-based businesses. Are y'all agnostic on that divide, or?
We're pretty agnostic. I mean, we do a lot of e-commerce, SaaS, agencies, publishing. We love subscription businesses. Those are just great. So obviously we do a lot of that. But boring businesses are awesome too. Right now, I'm working with a client out of Texas that is very successful HVAC company, and they are looking to grow through acquisition into other verticals. So they're looking at plumbing, they're looking at electrical, they're looking at pest control. They basically want to be a vertically integrated home services company, and we are their M&A advisors to make all of that happen. So we are, by the way, if you're listening to this, you're in Houston, Texas, and you're in one of those categories, call me, I want to buy your business. You know, we work in the interior design space. We work, you know, HVAC again, as I mentioned. I don't get into kind of Main Street retail or anything like that. I don't get into restaurants, but, you know, there are some boring businesses that do really, really well. HVAC, auto repair. Wall Street Journal article about how much money is being rolled into car washes a few weeks ago. I mean, that kind of went viral, right, in the M&A space. I mean, who knew? Like, who knew that car washes is right now the hottest category there is? Well, why are car washes the hottest category? Because somebody figured out that if you take away the quarters and put in a subscription model, which is unlimited monthly car washes, that those things become absolute cash cow. Car washes are massive right now. Their valuation is through the roof. But again, it's because it's subscription. So you can apply a subscription model to a lot of things. And that's a key to success, by the way. If you have a business that isn't subscription and you can make it subscription, you can increase the value of that business threefold or fourfold in enterprise value. And if you're thinking about acquiring a business, look for a business that's not currently subscription, buy it and turn it into subscription, and you can make yourself millions of dollars. So we'll
get
to the day.
Yeah. And again, I came from a boring business background of being in, you know, Main Street businesses and trampoline parks and escape rooms and stuff. I think that there are a lot of influencers in the boring business space that really make their money monetizing information much more than they do running boring businesses, right? And, you know, they're in the trampoline park business. There's like at the gate revenue, basically when you walk in and you pay for the thing, versus like a membership based subscription revenue. And you have birthday party revenue, which is a big piece of it. And, you know, trampoline parks usually trade at a 4 or 5x multiple, and they kind of scaled fast to 30 locations and they sold for 8 or 9x. And so I talked to the bankers that did that deal. They said that a lot of that eight or 9x was driven by the subscription, you know, that they built a membership side to the business, but it's hard.
Yeah. I mean, how many times are you going to go to the trampoline park? I can see that being a tough sell, but it's doable. It's doable.
Totally doable. And one of the big lessons that I got from an M&A client when I was a lawyer was like, only do deals that if you're right, you get rich. And if you're wrong, you don't go broke. And yeah. One of the reasons why partials work so well when they do work is because you can get in, figure out whether your playbook works or not. And if it doesn't work, then like move on from it. Like I know the search fund world and these kids that get MBAs and read entrepreneurship through acquisition stuff, or they're listening to the influencers of the world and they're like, buying a boring business is the simple thing. And I just know that there's work involved. You know what I mean? And the hard part about boring businesses is you typically have to execute your operational playbook through like $12 to $15 an hour employed people. So you're trying to execute something that from an operational standpoint has to get executed in a very, very simple way. Particularly boring business, Main Street businesses have like a very natural constraint on scale. You know, they're hard to scale out because right. Your labor is not massively sophisticated or like massively inclined to like work Silicon Valley style hours.
Right.
And like there's capital intensity and scaling usually.
Well, you talk about the influencers and then kind of the influence they have on these dreamers. One thing that I see a lot of is this expectation from buyers that, you know, they're told every day, you know, work on the business, not in the business. So find a business that's just cash flowing and you don't actually have to do anything. That's great. And those businesses are out there. But if you're just looking for a business that's just going to like hum along at the same kind of cash flow and maybe, you know, you jump in a little bit, you know, that's fine. But the reality is most of these people are looking for a business they can scale, right? Increase the price value 2x, 3x, 4x, however. And those two don't match. You can't buy a business, never touch it, and expect it to increase in multiple value because you didn't do it. Like,
because you turned on Facebook ads, right?
Yeah. And so there's this real disconnect in the messaging out there from some of the gurus and whatnot. It's like, can you buy a business and cash flow it and have a nice little tidy business and not have to work much on it? Yes. Can you buy a business and scale it and not have to work much on it? No. You know, yeah. like we're talking about, like, well, this HVAC company I'm working with right now, the owner is really smart. He's identified he wants to be a subscription business.
Yeah.
We're going to buy a plumbing, we're going to buy an electrical, buy a pest control. So year round, he needs to come to your house. You know, in the summertime, it's to kill bugs. In the wintertime, it's to fix your heater. In the summertime, it's to fix your air conditioner and do condition, you know, electrical, you know, you name it. So he's building a subscription model that will require him to be at your house every single month.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of work.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
But his enterprise value is going to go from a business that trades normally at a, you know, 2.1 of EBITDA to a 6 of EBITDA in the next 18 to 24 months. But it's a lot of work. Can he do that by just working on the business and not in the business? Heck no. He's got to make it happen, you know. Now he's got some brilliant people like my team behind him to do it, but he's still going to work his tail off and he knows it, you know, so that's fine. But yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about kind of things that don't match up with the expectations that people are being kind of sold.
Yeah. And you have to be able to identify what business you're actually getting into whenever you buy a business. And it's not what the front of house looks like. It's a different, really the business that I was in the trampoline park business is the new attraction business, which is a CapEx intensive business because all entertainment businesses are driven by novelty. And so like you have to bring novel attractions, even though you look at the P&L and you look at it and you see the cash flow stable, and we've been running it for 5 years and it continues to make the same thing over and over again. Like you have to get to the point where you get comfortable of understanding the real business. You know, the trampoline park business is you're kind of in the construction business much more than you're in the
constantly building new
trampoline. Yeah, you gotta build new attractions and
right.
You know, it's been an evolution. When we started 11 or 12 years ago, we were kind of the first people to market, but as the business matured, we realized that we were in the digital marketing business in order to compete against Main Event and all these people that have private equity that were running Facebook ads and Groupon and all this stuff. And so you're really in an advertising business much more than you are. And it's not about birthday parties. It's about digital marketing, which is part of the reason that kind of expedited our exit is we were like, nah, we're in a different business than we agreed to be in when we started this thing. And I don't want to be in the digital marketing
which
business.
By the way is behind bad partnerships is probably the second most common reason we see partial deals be successful, and that's because of exactly what you just said. We deal with a lot of owners who have a business, they've kind of plateaued. There's two reasons a business doesn't kind of plateaus. One is operational inefficiency, and they just, you know, they're stagnant because they're bottlenecked at some level and because they don't have a good operating system and game plan there. If their operating system is good, usually the other reason is because they don't have good marketing, especially mm-hmm. digital marketing. And the average business owner out there, they really know, name it, trampoline parks, or they really know HVAC, or they really know whatever it is they know, but they don't know marketing. And the marketing world has changed. Like, you used to be able to do, you know, direct mail and newspapers and billboard and like, no, that's gone away. So it's pretty much all digital. So we work with a number of people who are really good digital marketers.
Yeah.
And they are specifically looking for partial acquisition deals so they can go in and take a piece of a business and scale it with their skill set and knowledge and have an increased multiple exit. And we tie those with the owners who need that. That's our number one thing is like, we don't know what to do with marketing wise. Like, we've hit this plateau and now we're stuck. Great. I know somebody who can partner with you, do a partial, and then together you guys will take it up to here. So that's our, like I said, it's our number one or number two, kind of depending on what day it is, with like that partnership, why we see partials happening really, yeah. really well. I mean, that's a really good reason to do a partial. So.
And you have to be able to relieve both constraints, right? Particularly, I mean, a partial helps solve it. Like, if you're doing a full acquisition, if a digital marketer goes and buys a landscaping business, right, that's been doing $3 million a year for the past whatever, it's typical that marketing could be improved, but really they're at their operational max, right?
Right.
And there's like an operational constraint that has to get relieved somehow before right. like well, more
and
business
you have to
happens.
What
you know what
they
I mean?
Need before right. you go out and try and find an acquirer, you know? And so sometimes it's a process, you know, that some clients will work with for months and months and months. It's almost a coaching process, right?
Yeah.
Identifying the bottlenecks, identifying the issues so that we are finding the source of the problem and say, okay, here's your problem. We've identified it for sure. Now, if we bring somebody in to solve that problem, you can either, you know, write a check to somebody every month, you know, to a digital marketing company and that money's gone, or, you know, you can buy a digital marketing company, or we'll have a digital marketing company buy you. It goes both ways sometimes. And
yeah.
so again, always own your supply chain, right? And so we work to put those kind of deals together. But yeah, a lot of times we do have to look at whether it's operational or marketing. You know, it's half and half. So if it's operational, then, you know, we've got people who come in and lay, you know, like EOS, you put an operating system in place and hierarchy
yeah.
and kind of clean things up, sort of, you know, management consultant types that'll work with that. So we'll figure out what their need is. We'll solve the need with a partnership and everybody grows.
So assume it's you have 200 grand working at a company, you're working as a marketing guy, a banker, a lawyer, whatever, it doesn't matter. You got 200 grand though that you're looking okay. to.
So what would I advise
deploy.
Somebody that's got 200 grand that they want to go out and?
What would you do? You yourself, not you as the advisor, you in that situation.
You know, I think first of all, assess your skills, right? So if you're a really good marketer, find a business that needs really good marketing. If you're a good operational logistics guy, find a business that needs good operational logistics. People ask me, what vertical are you looking for? The vertical of the business for our purposes is much less important than the vertical of the problem we're trying to solve.
Sure.
Because problems are problems are problems. And it almost doesn't matter what the business is. You know, almost every business has a core set of three or four things that we always find they're doing wrong. Go in and find a business that meets your core strengths. And then negotiate a deal where you get, whether you want majority ownership, minority ownership, or full ownership, key is leverage that $200,000. You should not get $200,000 in value for your $200,000. You should be getting $2 million in value for your $200,000.
Yeah.
And so I see that mistake a lot. And that's in leveraging money like that is really not that difficult. So if you can find a business that you can buy into with your 200 grand, get $2 million worth of leverage out of it, apply your specific set of skill set to scale that business, and then look and see if you scale it and the way you scale it, can you increase its enterprise value? Because it's not worth it. If you take a business doing $3 million at a 15% EBITDA, so you know, 450 grand, and then you scale it to 5 million at the exact same EBITDA multiple, and it's at a 3 multiple, you're not leveraging much.
Yeah.
You can make some money, but the real key is find a business that right now is selling in the industry that it's in at a 3 multiple, and find out how to make it a 7 multiple and apply your skills. And that's how you leverage. So take that 200 grand, leverage it for $2 million worth of value, and then buy a business that you can double or triple in enterprise value in a couple of years by, again, turning it into a subscription business or expanding it out so that it's got more footprint, whatever it is. That's leverage. And most people are kind of looking at it with, well, I'll buy a $200,000 business that's netting 50 grand a year, and I'll try and scale it and make 100 grand a year.
Obviously, there's expertise capital, knowledge capital, whatever. But in terms of financial capital, obviously on pool acquisitions, there's SBA, there's a bunch of asset backed, revenue based, whatever. You can do all those things. Have you seen people be able to do financially leveraged deals from a partial acquisition standpoint?
Yeah, I think I'm understanding you. Like,
like if I go and I want to buy 20% of your business for $1 million, that I can do that through a lending partner, you know, bringing financial leverage from a lending standpoint on minority or majority deals.
Yeah, because again, a lot of owners don't know about how to do revenue-based financing.
Using the assets of the business, finance. Yeah.
Yeah, you can
factoring out accounts receivable or
whatever. Right. So you can take your 200 grand and use it as leverage to get other money in place. And again, that's how you can start to get, like, you know, no money out of pocket kind of deals, right?
Yeah.
But no money out of pocket is really hard to do. Some money out of pocket changes the game. And it doesn't have to be a lot. At $200,000, you can get $2 million of leverage if you do it right.
Yeah.
You know, but if you have zero, it's really hard to get 10X of zero, right?
Yeah.
So you need to start with something. So
that's my buddy says, the same guy who said, you know, do something where if you're right, you get rich. And if you're wrong, you don't go broke. He says it's really hard to be a capitalist without capital.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. But capital's much easier to find. People don't think about, you know, where capital can come from. You know, that's something else we help buyers figure out. I mean, you can borrow against your 401k. You can, you know, there's home equity loans. There's Aunt Bertha that's sitting on $1 million.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
there's money all over the place. People just either they don't think about it or they're too scared to ask. And one person like, go at it. And then they come back and go, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe it. Aunt Bertie gave me $100,000. I just asked. You know, that's people want their friends and family, loved ones to be successful. And you know, there's opportunities out there. We just kind of work through that. But you need a little capital to get going, but you don't need a ton. 200 grand, you can do a lot of good stuff with 200 grand. And that's not, I mean, you're gonna see me, that's not a ton of money.
No,
most people have that they could borrow against their 401k,
home equity line of credit, whatever.
Well, yeah, their HELOCs. We see all sorts of stuff. So, you know, sell your Pokemon cards. There's all sorts of ways to raise capital that people think about.
Yeah, what's something that you believe now that you didn't believe 5 years ago, or vice versa? Something that you don't believe now that you did believe 5 years. Maybe I said the same thing twice. I don't know, but one of either of those iterations.
What do I believe now that I didn't believe 5 years ago?
What's an old belief that you no longer believe? Something that you used to believe 5 years ago that now you no longer believe?
Wow, that's a tough question. That's a big one.
We end with the bangers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a huge, huge question. Well, so again, my M&A journey was interesting because my first M&A deal was like literally somebody came knocking on my door and offered me a ton of money for business. And I thought it was really easy. And then I went from there to a PE-backed venture where, again, it was really easy because I had all the money in the world. So a lot of my career in M&A, everything I just talked about, like, oh, give me 200 grand and I'll show you how to turn it into 10 million. I did not believe that 5 years ago. Like, I was very much of the kind of VC, PE, like, you need a ton of capital.
Yeah, conventional. Deals. Yeah.
Even though I had experienced my own, or I'd sold by that time, I might have sold 4 businesses of my own. And I, you know, none of those people were venture capital backed or PE backed. They literally, you know, paid for it. So I missed with my own eyes how simple this is and how leverageable it is for many years. And I'm kicking myself for that, because now that I understand how this all kind of works in the last several years, boy, I'm just like, anybody can do this and be successful at it. Everybody has some skill set that they bring to the world that they can bring to an acquisition deal and add value. But most people only think that there's one way to do that, and that is have a job, exchange their time for a salary. But there's other ways of doing it. And that's been my biggest revelation, is like, M&A really can be for anyone. And I definitely did not really understand that 5 years ago, even though I had bought and sold multiple businesses of my own. I just never thought about it like that.
Yeah. What? Where's the best place for people to find you? And what's the ideal person to reach out to you at Westbound?
Westboundroad.com is my website, westboundroad.com, or you can look me up on LinkedIn. I'm very active over there. I have a very unique name. I mention this all the time. My last name is Fonky. If you see somebody with that last name anywhere in the world, I'm related to them. There's only one Marty Fonky in the entire world, and I'm it. You Google me, I'm the guy. That's what's going to come up in Google. There was a time where I had 12,000 results on Google. Through all the algorithm changes, it's a lot less than that. But I'm very proud of the fact that if you just Google me, you'll still get thousands of results, all of them good. I work really, really hard to do good by people. And so I'm proud of the fact that we have a really good internet presence. And I've worked hard to maintain that. So Google me, go to LinkedIn, go to westboundroad.com. Who's my ideal person? Really, it's any business owner who wants to scale their business through acquisition, or any business owner who's looking to sell their business all or part, or they just have a problem with their business they're trying to solve. We can help solve it. You want to grow? We can help you. You want to buy a business? We can help you. You want to sell a business? We can help you. Yeah, I love talking to people. I love problem solving. I don't do jigsaw puzzles. Businesses are my jigsaw puzzles, and I love it. Solving problems every single day. So bring me your problems. Let me see if I can solve them.